Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Hey, welcome back to Trottle Up. We are going to be continuing our discussion from last week. And this is a special edition of Trottle Up, part two. Okay, so this is Critical Thinking in Business Operations, part two. And we are planning a series of special editions that address this issue or this area. And the reason for that is, you know, from my perspective, the reason for that is pretty obvious. We need to consider bringing critical thinking into our business operations. And there's, I think the evidence is mounting for us to do such a thing. I think that it's pretty clear that the whole enterprise or organizations out there, let's call them the business enterprise environment, they're all moving in that direction. Even the World Economic Forum has, in their last report, has stated that critical thinking and complex problem solving is the number one most in-demand set of skills in the global job market and also the most difficult to fill. And so we're trying to do our part here, and we will consider us to be part of the effort, part of the initiative to bring critical thinking into our business operations and really make it front and center. That's, you know, in my way of thinking, the first order of business ought to be not what we are actually making or not what we are actually proposing to make for delivery into the marketplace. But the first order of business is how well do we think? How well can we understand things? How well can we critically analyze a particular environment or a particular situation or a particular product or set of products? How can we engage our critical thinking faculties such that we can optimize performance, we can avoid costly errors, we can avoid mistakes, we can avoid those situations in which, if left unattended, will degenerate into chaos and catastrophe. And so, you know, what I was thinking of is that one way, I'm not even sure that I can say this is the best way to address this subject. I would think that it's probably one way. It's kind of the way that I have thought about things for a long time. You know, I used to have to do this when I was working as a military officer. As I rose up through the ranks and became more and more of a problem solver, I had to deal with these issues. And then after I retired from the Navy, I went to work for a major industry and had to basically do the same thing. So I have often looked at it from this perspective, which is what is my perspective? The first order of business ought to be, if our objective is to achieve mission success, the first order of business ought to be, and I think this is pretty obvious, to avoid catastrophe. If we are dealing in a complex world, if we are dealing with in a complex or employing complex systems with multiple players, and you name it. The first order of business is how can we continuously and confidently avoid catastrophe? And so catastrophe avoidance is the key. One of my projects along the way was to produce a catastrophe avoidance algorithm, which I have done. And actually, it's part of it's going to be part of the workshop that I'm going to be putting on in April in Chicago. And so avoidance of catastrophe. And so critical thinking in business operations, okay? And here we are looking at, of course, the ultimate goal here is to achieve mission success. And we're going to do that by, first and foremost, avoiding those situations in which catastrophe could happen, or avoiding, I'm going to say it this way, to avoid, the first order of business ought to be that we avoid chaos and catastrophe. And in doing so, and part of the reason for this, I guess the major reason for this series is to take a look at those situations that have occurred that resulted in catastrophe, and to be able to learn something from that. We're not proposing that we could have done any better. We're not creating this lofty impression of ourselves, but we are trying to figure out, and you know, in aviation, which is my industry, we have always used that mindset or employed that mindset, which is let's look at the last accident or last series of accidents objectively, so that we can learn something, or hopefully we can learn something, so we don't repeat the same mistakes over and over again. Are we a learning organization? Are we agile and adaptive? Can we adapt ourselves so as to correct those errors? Or, you know, really, more importantly, is to, you know, is to nip the problem in the bud, to employ some early corrective action before it becomes catastrophic. And so, in other words, how can we take a look at things and be able to see, or be able to determine, or even be able to intuit that if left unchecked, we may very well deal with a seriously deteriorating situation in which catastrophe happens, or in which enormous amounts of money have to be shelled out because nobody was paying attention, and so things spiraled out of control, and so, you know, damage control was in effect, or had to be brought into effect at an enormous cost. And typically damage control in any large organization is extremely costly. Some damage, events that have spiraled out of control have resulted in the bankruptcy and the demise of the organization entirely. And so that becomes pretty important for not only survivability, but to avoid those situations where we can then use our energies to promote new innovative ideas and to move forward quickly so as to capture a reliable market, to achieve mission success in the military, and so forth and so on. Now, you know, I have talked also about military. And so when I say critical thinking, business operations, I'm not just limiting that to, you know, to the private enterprise. Also, you know, are you in the business of doing something at the government level? Are you in the business of doing something at the academic level? Are you in the business of doing something at the military level? And also, we're going to be talking on this show and other shows about space. Are you in the business of space exploration or space activities? And so I use the term business broadly. All right, so this series, we have touched on a couple of businesses on part one. We're going to continue to look at some other businesses in part two and see if we can understand what happened and to see if we can formulate ideas and concepts that would prevent such things from happening again. And I'm not talking about literally. I'm talking about conceptually, or from a systems perspective, or better yet, from a critical thinking perspective. And so what are we going to be looking at? All right, the first thing for part two, we're going to be looking at the Deepwater Horizon disaster. And that's very, very instructive. In fact, you know, if you haven't read these reports, and if you have some time, or maybe you could have somebody summarize them for you, we're going to try to do our best to help you understand what went on so that we can summarize this and help all of us out there that are leading busy lives and don't have a lot of time to do some research. Some of the research is, of course, necessary that for us in whatever engages us, whatever things that we do either for a living or do for any kind of a serious effort. So what is it about the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe? Now, of course, there was a recent movie on this subject, and we've talked about this before in other shows, but not in this particular context, but similar. And we use this only because, well, for two reasons. One, it's well documented, and you can. I would encourage all of us to revisit that movie. It's particularly good in terms of what actually went on. And the whole idea here is as expressed in this report that I'm going to be discussing. This report was put together by the Deepwater Horizon Study Group. Subtitle of this report is The Investigation into the Macondo Well. That was the name of the well that they were drilling. Each well has a particular name or location, title, if you will. Macondo Well, and the event was the blowout disaster. And again, the reason why we're going to do this is that we're going to try to learn something that we can take with us. So as we, as members of the, the business community or the members of the military community or whatever, that we can try to do better. We can try to improve our systems, improve our understanding, improve our critical thinking skills so that we can head these disasters off at the pass and prevent them from becoming, well, let's say potential disasters, head them off at the pass, prevent them from becoming catastrophes. So catastrophe prevention is the key. You know, I used to have to do this, frankly, on a daily basis, because in flying airplanes and managing flight operations and stuff like that I was involved with, that was a front and center issue. If things did not go well, we could easily wind up with a catastrophe. So that became one of the things that was our one of our major motivating factors in everything that we did, was to try to avoid that. Now, were we always successful? No, we weren't. Many reasons for that. Some of them, and in my particular viewpoint, the most important reason was that our critical thinking skills were not up to speed. We hadn't paid enough attention to that. We were focused on other factors that we thought were important, and they were, but they weren't as important as we thought they were. The other factors happened to be technology. Very important, but it wasn't the most important thing. Human psychology was very important also. That was kind of a late comer into the process. We didn't really understand that very well. Began to understand human psychology as a contributing factor to mission success in World War II, by the way. That was something that that we learned the hard way. So psychology was important too, but it wasn't the major factor. What was the major factor? I can boil it down into a couple of terms here. All right, the major factor was our critical thinking skills were not up to the demands of the environment, and so the environment was very demanding. The environment was. We're going to use these terms over and over again. The environment was complex. The environment was very, very demanding because it was complex and it was time compressed. And that demand, we had to rise to the occasion, okay, because we didn't really quite get it. And this, you know, my experience goes all the way back to the 60s where I started in this profession. And we didn't really quite understand it, but we had to rise to the occasion. What was the occasion? The occasion was a complex, time-compressed environment. Another term that I often use to simplify things is to say that it's a mission-critical environment. But nevertheless, it was complex and it was time-compressed, and we had to rise to the equation. So we had to develop those critical thinking skills in order for us to perform well in a complex, time-compressed environment. And that was the whole point of what we were trying to do. And so we did look at things that have happened that were not pretty. They were some of them were quite disastrous. And we try to learn from that and to say, okay, not only should we learn something about this particular accident, but also, what can we understand about how to prevent other things from occurring? How can we abstract this to a higher order reasoning level? And higher order reasoning was one of the keys to our success. We had to be able to get out of the specifics or the literal world and look at things in a more abstract, a more analytical way. And so we tried to do that. What is it about this Deepwater Horizon disaster that we should know something about? So the way I'm going to start this by taking a look at this report and trying to build the case for the ideas that I'm trying to present here. All right, what are the ideas? The ideas are critical thinking, and what kind of case am I building? Well, I'm trying to build a case that if we don't address ourselves specifically to this demand that's being placed upon us, then we will repeat these same mistakes over and over again. Okay, so the first progress report that came out after the Deepwater Horizon catastrophe was this, and it was issued on May of 2010. The disaster, I'm quoting here, the disaster was preventable had existing progressive guidelines and practices been followed. This catastrophic failure appears to have resulted from multiple violations of the laws of public resource development and its proper regulatory oversight. The third progress report issued December of 2010 concluded, analysis of currently available evidence indicates that a single critical element participating in this blowout was the undetected entry of high-pressure, high-temperature charged hydrocarbons into the Macondo well. At the time of the Macondo blowout, the corporate culture remained one that was embedded in risk-taking and cost-cutting. Perhaps it is the underlying unconscious mind that governs the actions of an organization and personnel. Cultural influences that permeate an organization and industry and manifest in actions that can either promote and nurture a highly reliable organization with high reliability systems or actions reflective of complacency, excessive risk-taking, and a loss of situational awareness. Okay, so the report continues by looking at organizational factors, and we will summarize them here. The organizational causes of the Deepwater Horizon disaster are deeply rooted in the histories and cultures of the oil, offshore oil and gas industry, and the governing bodies. While this particular disaster involves a particular group of organizations, the roots of the disaster transcend this group of organizations. This disaster involves an international industry and its governance and its methodologies. This disaster was preventable if existing progressive guidelines and practices had been followed. In many ways, this disaster closely replicates other major disasters that have been experienced by the oil and gas industry. Now, this is really what I'm going to talk about here is really it's mind blowing, because here we begin to see that that the industry was slow to learn about taking the necessary steps. What were the necessary steps that were needed for the reliable prevention of these catastrophes from happening again? And we can see that the industry was slow, and that's not atypical. We notice that time and time again, the a particular industry is for, I don't know, various reasons. It could be cultural, it could be whatever, but it's slow to consider those things that are extremely important, that are relevant, that are necessary for the prevention of these things from happening again. What are the safeguards that we have put in place? What are the guardrails? What are the safety switches? What are the circuit breakers? Where are they? Where are the risk management, or where is the risk management system? What does it look like? So when you go in an organization, the first thing we ought to be looking for, and it doesn't matter who we are, we could be a manager, we could be a regulator, we could be an employee. The first order of business ought to be where is your safety management system and what does it look like? If we don't have, if we don't have a dedicated display system or a dedicated panel that says safety management or operational risk management, it's another way of saying it. If we don't have an operational risk management panel, then why not? It's pretty clear that for any complex system, we need to have an operational risk management panel that shows us not only what the current risks are, but also projecting into the future, and particularly how we respond to mission critical events. And so, are there mission critical events that we have encountered? And if there are mission critical events that we have encountered, what are they, and where are they listed? And when we run our drill and practice exercises, do we engage our risk management system? Do we turn it on? Is it operative? What does it look like when we are doing these drill and practice exercises? Is it doing its job? And if it's not doing its job during the practices, then the big question here is why not? Okay, so let me continue with this report. In many ways, it says, this disaster closely replicates other major disasters that have been experienced by the offshore oil and gas industry. 8 months before the Macondo well blowout, the blowout of the Monterra well offshore Australia in the Timor Sea, developed in almost the same way with very similar downstream effects. Also, the North Sea Piper Alpha platform explosion and the Petrobras P-36 platform sinking offshore Brazil followed roadmaps to disaster that are very similar to that developed during and after the Macondo well blowout. These were, the report says, these were major system failures involving a sequence of unanticipated compounding malfunctions and breakdowns, a hallmark of system disasters. The report continues. This is even more alarming. This disaster also had eerie similarities to the Texas City refinery disaster. These similarities include, one, multiple system operator malfunctions during a critical period in operations, two, not following required or accepted operations guidelines, three, neglected maintenance, four, instrumentation that either did not work properly or whose data interpretation gave false positives, five, inappropriate assessment and management of operational risk, that's a key one, six, multiple operations conducted at critical times with unanticipated interactions, seven, inadequate communications between members of the operational group, eight, unawareness of risk, nine, diversion of attention at critical times, 10, a culture with incentives that provided increases in productivity without commensurate increases in protection, 11, inappropriate cost and corner cutting, 12, lack of appropriate selection and training of personnel, and 13, improper management of change. In both cases, meetings were held with operations personnel at the same time and place that initial failures were developing. These meetings were intended to congratulate the operating crew and organization for their excellent record of worker safety. Both of these disasters have served, as many others have served, to clearly show there are important differences between worker safety and system safety. One does not assure the other. This report goes on to say, in all of these disasters, risks were not properly assessed in hazardous natural and industrial management environments. The industrial management environment unwittingly acted to facilitate progressive degradation and destruction of the barriers provided to prevent the failures. An industrial environment of inappropriate cost and corner cutting was evident in all of these cases, as was the lack of appropriate and effective management by either the industry or the government agencies. As a result, the system's barriers were degraded and destroyed to the point where the natural environment elements overcame and destroyed the systems. Compounding failures that followed triggered failures, allowing the triggering failures to develop into a major catastrophe. Findings. Number one, the oil and gas industry has embarked on an important next generation series of high hazard exploration and production operations in the ultra deep waters of the northern Gulf of Mexico. These operations pose risks much greater than generally recognized. These significant increases in risks are due to complexities of hardware and human systems and emergent technologies used in these operations. All right, that's particularly important. That's profound. All right, so they're talking about complexities. This is a complex environment, and we didn't seem to be quite up to the task of dealing with this high level of complexity. And that's going to be the common theme as we go forward in these series of special editions of Throttle Up. We're going to be talking about that in the context of how complex is the environment in which we are operating in. Increased hazards also posed by the ultra-deep water marine environment. Increased hazards posed by the hydrocarbon reservoirs and the pressure and the sensitivity of the marine environment to the introduction of very large quantities of hydrocarbons. Finding two, the Macondo well project failures demonstrated that the consequences of major offshore oil and gas system failures can be several orders of magnitude greater than associated with previous generations of these activities. Finding three, the Macondo well project failures provide important opportunities to re-examine the strategies and timing for development of important non-renewable product and energy resource. This final frontier in the ultra-deep waters of the northern Gulf of Mexico and other similar areas provides access to an important public resource that has significant implications for the future generations and energy security of the United States. Finding four, major step change improvements that consistently utilize the best practices are required by industry to avoid such catastrophes in the future. All right. Now, I'm scrolling through. Okay, so here is some, I think these are very instructive. These are important recommendations. So after the findings of this board, this accident board, if you will, you know, in aviation, we always put together an accident board every time there's a major accident to try to figure out what went wrong so we can fix those things beforehand, before another catastrophe happens. So I'm going to go through the recommendations. Now, keep in mind here that this is very much like what we encountered in aviation. It's very much like what's encountered in many other industries. And there ought to be some cross-pollinization from industry to industry across these industrial silos. In fact, we ought to break down these silos and to look at what were the lessons learned from aviation, what was the lessons learned from the chemical industry that we can apply here. Recommendation number one, develop and maintain an effective technology delivery system that will unite industry and government collaboration in exploration for and a development of high hazard environment resources in reliable and sustainable ways. Recommendation number two, develop and maintain industrial and government institutions responsible for future development and implementation of risk assessment and management capabilities for the exploration and production of high hazard environmental extraction situations. Okay, risk assessment and management, or another term that is used, operational risk management, ORM. And so that, you know, and that ought to be across the board. In fact, there ought to be maybe a central clearinghouse where we can, you know, we can go to and say, okay, what are the best practices in terms of operational risk management? What do we know that works, and not just something that is hypothetical or something that's not tried and true, but what do we know that works with respect to risk management in high-risk environments? How do we do that? And so that ought to be, you know, some entrepreneur ought to come up with that, I would think, right away and say, okay, across all of the major industries that deal with high-risk, complex environments, this is the best risk management system to date. And they ought to be employed in all of the major industries, including, of course, the military. Implement proven risk management technology within industry to create and maintain high reliability organizations and high reliability systems used in the exploration and development of high hazard environment hydrocarbon resources. Okay, so high reliability in an environment that can be represented as being high hazard, and how do we do that? Develop and maintain, this is recommendation 3.1, develop and maintain industrial and governmental high reliability organizations, including operators, contractors, and regulators, that maintain adequate and acceptable balances of production and protection. Also, another recommendation, develop and maintain advanced risk management technology in full scope formal systems that engage operators, contractors, and regulators in collective development and maintenance of high reliability exploration and production systems. Okay, so that's what they're talking about, to develop this risk management technology, develop it. Another recommendation, develop and maintain effective and reliable oil spill and blowout response. In other words, what do we have in place that can mitigate these disastrous situations, oil spill and response? What do we have in place in a meaningful way? Do we have an active response team? Do we have a set of elite problem solvers that we can send to these trouble spots? Another recommendation, and I think this is the last one. Let me see. Yeah, these recommendations should be fostered by permitting a series of validation projects that would engage highly qualified operators, contractors, and service companies in field demonstrations that ultra-hazardous, high-risk exploration and production projects can be performed while properly addressing the system risks associated with such projects. Okay, so a series of validation projects. That becomes a key. All right, so we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. Now, this is a special edition, of course, part two, our special edition series that we're doing right now is called Critical Thinking in Business Operations. And we're going to be looking at, in these a series of shows. We're going to be looking at a number of things, but the major theme or perspective that we're taking is that the first and foremost, if we want to avoid those catastrophic situations, if we want to avoid catastrophe, or a little bit more broadly, we could say, if we want to avoid chaos and catastrophe, what do we need to do? Is there anything that we can do beforehand? Now, I guess I could say that there's a fair number of organizations that would answer that in a disappointing way. I think a fair number of organizations would say, well, there's really nothing we can do beforehand because we don't know the specifics of the situation. Now, I think that's a little short-sighted, frankly. I think that there are a number of things that we can do beforehand to avoid chaos and catastrophe. And that's something that, you know, I've been working on over the last, I guess, 10 years or so. What are the things that we can put in place to, well, not to guarantee, I don't think there's any guarantees. There's certainly a lot of uncertainty in the world, particularly in complex environments. But what are the things that we can put in place that would at least reduce the likelihood that we would encounter, or we would not be able to effectively respond to those situations in which impending catastrophe is evident? So we're going to finish this show. At least we're going to try to finish our discussion here by bringing up another a situation from the annals of spaceflight. And this happens to be the Hubble Space Telescope. For those of us, I think many of us realize that that the Hubble Space Telescope was launched with a considerable expense, was launched with a defective mirror or with a defective system. And so it was launched, put in space, and as it turns out, it didn't function very well. It had a defective reflective mirror. And so another couple of missions had to be sent up. Space shuttle missions had to be sent up to the Hubble that was orbiting Earth at the time to apply some corrective measures. And they did do a pretty good job of correcting it. I don't think it was corrected in terms of 100%, but it was corrected significantly, and so they were able to correct the situation. But of course, when we look at the circumstances leading up to this rather disastrous situation, we can see that there were a lot of things that should have been done beforehand. Some of them were fairly simple things that should have been done beforehand to prevent this this enormously costly and almost nearly catastrophic. It wasn't, I don't think we could say that it was, but it became very, very close to being catastrophic in terms of performance. This report that I'm going to read starts off by saying that within weeks of the launch of the telescope, this is the Hubble telescope, the return images indicate a serious problem with the optical system. Although the first images appear to be sharper than those of ground-based telescopes, Hubble failed to achieve a final sharp focus, and the best image quality obtained was drastically lower than expected. Analysis of the flawed images showed that the cause of the problem was that the primary mirror had been polished to the wrong shape. Now, I guess the question here is, how is that possible? Didn't they test it? Wasn't it properly tested before this thing was launched at an enormous expense? And the answer is, Actually, they didn't. I know this is really kind of stunning. Although, and this report continues, it says, although it was probably the most precisely figured optical mirror ever made, at the perimeter, it was too flat by about 2.2 micrometers. This difference was catastrophic, including severe spherical aberrations, a flaw in which light reflecting off the edge of a mirror focuses on a different point from the light reflecting off its center. Okay, origin of the problem. A commission headed up by Mr. Lou Allen, director of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, was established to determine how the error could have arisen. The Allen Commission found that a reflective null corrector, a testing device used to achieve a properly shaped non-spherical mirror, had been incorrectly assembled. One lens was out of position. During the initial grinding and polishing of the mirror, the contractor analyzed its surface with two conventional reflective correctors. However, for the final manufacturing step, they switched to the custom-built reflective null corrector designed explicitly to meet very strict tolerances. The incorrect assembly of the device resulted in the mirror being ground very precisely, but to the wrong shape. Few final tests using the conventional correctors correctly reported spherical aberrations, but these results were dismissed, thus missing the opportunity to catch the error because the reflective null corrector was considered more accurate. All right, so this report continues, but it's another litany of missed opportunities to correct potentially catastrophic problems before the fact. There was a cultural issue going on. Also, there was lack of critical thinking, and there was no risk management efforts whatsoever, as it turns out. It was really kind of enlightening, and the whole situation degenerated into a complete disaster. But the skill and cunning of other organizations and other folks within NASA and the industry were able to ultimately fix the catastrophic error. Otherwise, it would have been completely useless, floating around in space as nothing more than space junk. So that comes to a happy ending. Deepwater Horizon didn't. It was a catastrophe that resulted in 11 deaths. I'm not sure I mentioned that before. And it was a tragedy, and it continues to be. But as we will press on next week for part 3 of this special edition of Throttle Up, which we have entitled Critical Thinking in Business Operations. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.